Good afternoon. This is Tamara reading the Decatur Herald and Review. It's Wednesday, June 11th. Let's start with the front page. From the Decatur Park District, we have Playground, a kid's destination, and a lovely photo of Mason Mitchell, 6, climbing on the Fairview Park Destination Playground after a Decatur Park District ribbon-cutting ceremony on Tuesday, June 10th. Ceremony held for long-awaited new playground in Fairview Park. From Donette Beckett in Decatur. Although she's a grandmother, Sandy Skelly has been anxiously awaiting the opening of the Fairview Park playground. "We spend a lot of time in this park," she said. Skelly, also known as Gigi, is grandmother to Devin Skelly's 4 children and is expected to return to the park often with the entire family, since they live on the west side of Decatur. "We waited a long time for it to open back up," Devin said. "We would drive by here and see them working on it. We'd stop by and ask the workers, and they wouldn't know anything. Now the wait is over." Members of the community joined Decatur Park District staff for a ribbon-cutting ceremony Tuesday evening. Opening the Fairview Park Destination Playground to the public. Devin's 10-year-old son, Declan, had a football in his hand by the time the ribbon fragments were picked up. "The previous playground with basic equipment was meant for younger children," according to Declan. "This one has bigger things, and I like big things," he said. As a sports enthusiast, Declan plans to use several pieces of equipment to get stronger, including the football wall, workout equipment, and a running course. "I love football, and they have a football field," he said. The playground has several components located on the south side of Pavilion 1. The play zone with blue surface has slides and climbing equipment designed for children 2 to 5 years old. An inclusive playground area was designed with easy access for those with various abilities and Americans with Disabilities Act features such as a zero-level entry. The challenge course offers obstacle course features. From young children in elementary school to older teens and adults, "There's something on the course to keep everybody active and engaged," said Clay Gerard, Park District Executive Director. The football wall has opportunities to develop skills such as punting and throwing. A 25-foot tower surrounded by nets can hold nearly 25 children at a time. The climbing equipment was designed to encourage decision-making and cognitive skills. The fitness area is expected to be used by parents as well as children. At a cost of $1.6 million, the new addition to the Fairview Park was made possible through grants and donations. The playground project coincided with the City of Decatur's Oakland and Grand Area Sewer Separation Project, which included a new pipeline being buried under the previous playground. The timing worked out where we were able to make a nice, solid platform for this, said Dr. Kristen White, Decatur Park District Board of Commissioners President. The Park District worked with various playground companies to create the appropriate area, White said. "We really wanted it to be more interactive rather than just a swing set and maybe a carousel," she said. Russ Bodine, Park District's Director of Operations, and his staff overcame several challenges while constructing the various pieces of equipment. "Everything had to match up," he said. "Every post had an exact GPS coordinate with a specific depth." The project began approximately 18 months ago with a few setbacks, such as weather, holding up the work. As soon as the playground began to take shape, families were seen testing the new equipment. "We couldn't keep them out," Bodine said. "We had fences and caution tape. However, the park crew understood the excitement. That's what it's for," Bodine said. "The playground is ready for play except for a few details, such as the netting used to block the football holes. And you'll need to bring your own football," Bodine said. The park crew is wrapping up the bicycle training course, which is expected to be finished in July. Fairview Park was established in 1857 by the Macon County Agricultural Society for the purpose of holding county fairs, according to Gerhard. "The Decatur Park District acquired the land in 1924 when the park district was formed," he said. Fairview Park's 180 acres, also holds Dreamland Lake, a rose garden, tennis courts, a skate park, a dog park, and is the hub for the Stevens Creek Bike Trail Network. The new playground is another special addition to the city. A destination playground is one that draws residents from across the city for unique experiences, Gerard said. This playground was specifically designed for children to promote active play. We also have a photo of Atticus Winnick, 9, visiting with Camp I Can, scaling the climbing tower at the Fairview Park Destination Playground after the ribbon-cutting ceremony on June 10th. Again from the front page, from Valerie Wells in Decatur, County Fair makes money despite rain. For the first time in decades, every grandstand event scheduled for this year's Macon County Fair had to be canceled due to rain. The last time that happened was 1977. Unfortunately, we've got about 6 inches of rain, said Fair Board President Evan Hall. I made the joke to one of the other guys, not that I'm a gambler, but I said I would never go near a craps table with the luck we've had this week. The harness racing was postponed from June 4th to June 6th, but it rained that day too, Hall said. So both the County Fair races and the Downstate Classic races will be held on Wednesday, June 11th, starting at noon. That's going to make for a long day of races, usually because the two are held on separate days, but over 1,000 people are employed by and depend on the income from racing. Some food vendors agreed to stay a few extra days to be present for the event, and the forecast calls for clear skies and mild temperatures with highs in the mid-80s for that day. In spite of losing the grandstand shows, the fair made money, he said, and the events that were able to go on as scheduled were some of the biggest the fair has ever hosted. The fair queen pageant drew 26 entrants, which is the largest for many years, while the livestock shows grew significantly. Our livestock numbers, and they're the important thing, they're all up, Hall said. We had 75 head of beef cattle, 72 goats, 400 exhibitors for rabbits, the biggest ever, and we broke a record for hogs. We had 186 last year and 309 this year. For a single day hog show, it was one of the biggest in the state, so we were very successful when it comes to that. While the board worked hard to plan a variety of events, including the grandstand events, everything supports the livestock show prizes, and they're the real point of the county fair, Hall said. So having such huge numbers of exhibitors made it a successful fair in spite of everything. There were some angry calls and comments over the canceled grandstand events, but it couldn't be helped. What's interesting is, if we'd been able to have the grandstand events, it would have been our best year, Hall said. The rodeo has been rescheduled for August 26, which is the first night of the Farm Progress show, and because Farm Progress doesn't have evening events, the hope is that people who are in town for it will also come to the rodeo. And more events are on the horizon. The Harvest Fest in October, with the Haunted Hayrack Ride and the Demolition Derby, will be back for the third year. Hall said there are other events in the works too, but not confirmed yet, so he can't talk about them until they are. The theme of it all is, we can't control the weather, Hall said, and getting 6 inches of rain, you roll with the punches. We're optimistic and looking forward to doing it again next year. We also have a photo on the front page of Akilin DeBerry, 4, speeding down the slide at the Fairview Park Destination Playground after a Decatur Park District ribbon-cutting ceremony on Tuesday, June 10th. In brief from Decatur, library celebrating 150th with video games. A Clash of Generations video gaming event will be held Saturday, June 21st in the Madden Auditorium at Decatur Public Library, as part of the celebration of the library's 150th anniversary. The morning session will be 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., and the afternoon session is 1:30 to 5:30 p.m. Teens ages 16 and older, adults and seniors, can try out various consoles and challenges while learning about the history, technology development, and how a Clash of Generations contest operates. While the event is not competitive and no winner will be declared, participants will be able to try out the challenges that they would face in a competitive event. Participation is limited, though anyone is welcome to attend as a spectator. To register, visit thedecaturlibrary.org. Police, man robbed at Garfield Park. Decatur police are investigating the report of an armed robbery Monday night at Garfield Park. According to a police report, officers were called to the park on Grand Avenue at approximately 8:30 p.m. A 44-year-old man said he was at the park with his 9-year-old daughter, who was playing on the swings with another child at the time of the incident. The man said he was approached by 3 men who exchanged words with him. They may have been in a gang, Sergeant Steve Carroll said, and one of the men produced a handgun from his waistband. They searched him, patted the victim down, while the other one held the gun to the victim's head, Carroll said. The man said they took his wallet, then ran away, Carroll said. From Clinton, kids fishing derby set at Weldon Springs. Weldon Springs State Park is offering a kids fishing derby on Saturday, June 14th, to celebrate Free Fishing Days. The event is sponsored by the Weldon Springs Foundation and Boy Scout Troop 142. Registration is free and begins at 8:30 a.m. at the concession area, and the derby will run from 9 to 11 a.m. Trophies will be awarded for first, second, and third places for number of fish caught in 3 age divisions, 6 and under, 7 and 9, and 10 to 12. No experience is needed to participate. Weldon Springs State Park is at 4734 Weldon Springs Road near Clinton. For more information, call the park office at 217-935-2644. In today's food section, it's all about that glaze. Fire up the grill this Father's Day for country-style ribs. And we have the recipe for tamarind orange agave grilled pork country ribs. Tamarind, an edible tropical fruit, is prized for its rich, piquant flavor. Look for tamarind in several forms in Asian, Indian, and Mexican markets. Fresh pods, the color of cinnamon, require the cook to soak and scrape the pulp out of the pod and to remove the oval seeds. I prefer the convenience of bottled pure tamarind concentrate, also available online, to add this dark, tangy fruit to a curry, marinade, glaze, or drink. Check the ingredient list. If the tamarind concentrate contains sweeteners, adjust your recipe accordingly. When tamarind is unavailable, I make a similarly dark and tangy puree using pitted prunes soaked in very hot water until soft. Drain, then puree the prunes in a small blender jar with several tablespoons of fresh lime juice. The puree should have the consistency of thin jam. The glaze can be made up to a week in advance. It's great with pork and chicken, and as a finishing sauce for grilled eggplant and firm tofu. Try it drizzled over cooked green beans with a sprinkling of sesame seeds. Now from our Nation and World page. Hegseth faces sharp questions. From the Pentagon, defense spending. Associated Press, Lolita Baldor and Tara Kopp. Officials say L.A. troop deployment will cost taxpayers $134 million. From Washington, D.C. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth faced questions and criticism Tuesday by lawmakers who demanded details on his move to deploy troops to Los Angeles, and they expressed bipartisan frustration that Congress has not yet gotten a full defense budget from the Trump administration. Your tenure as secretary has been marked by endless chaos, Representative Rosa DeLauro, Democrat from Connecticut, told Hegseth. Others, including Republican leaders, warned that massive spending projects, such as President Donald Trump's desire for a $175 billion Golden Dome missile defense system, will get broad congressional scrutiny. The troop deployment triggered several fiery exchanges as House committee members and Hegseth at times shouted over each other. After persistent questioning about the cost of sending National Guard members and Marines to Los Angeles in response to protests over immigration raids, Hegseth turned to his acting comptroller, Bryn Woolacott McDonnell, who said it would cost $134 million. Hegseth defended Trump's decision, to send the troops, saying they are needed to protect federal agents. He suggested the use of troops inside the United States will expand. I think we're entering another phase, especially under President Trump, with his focus on the homeland, where the National Guard and reserves become a critical component of how we secure that homeland, he said. The hearing before the House Appropriations Defense Subcommittee was the first time lawmakers were able to challenge Trump's defense chief since he was confirmed. Lawmakers complained widely that Congress hasn't yet gotten details of the administration's first proposed defense budget, which Trump has said would total $1 trillion. They said they're unhappy with the administration's efforts to go around Congress to push through changes. Spending issues that have raised questions in recent weeks include plans to spend hundreds of millions of dollars on security upgrades, to turn a Qatari jet into Air Force One, and to pour tens of millions into a parade recently added to the Army's 250th birthday bash, which coincides with Trump's birthday Saturday. Again from the Associated Press in Washington, D.C. Gabbard says AI will speed intelligence work. Machines tasked with declassifying assassination material. Artificial intelligence is speeding up the work of America's intelligence services, Director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard said Tuesday. Speaking to a technology conference, Gabbard said AI programs, when used responsibly, can save money and free up intelligence officers to focus on gathering and analyzing information. AI can run human resource programs, for instance, or scan sensitive documents ahead of potential declassification, Gabbard said. On President Donald Trump's orders, her office released tens of thousands of pages of material related to the assassinations of President John F. Kennedy and his brother, New York Senator Robert F. Kennedy. Experts predicted the process could take months or even years, but AI accelerated the work by scanning the documents to see if they contain any material that should remain classified, Gabbard said during her remarks at the Amazon Web Services Summit in Washington. We have been able to do that through the use of AI tools far more quickly than what was done previously, which was to have humans go through and look at every single one of those pages, Gabbard said. Next from Gaza, Israelis kill 36 in Gaza near humanitarian sites. Witnesses say troops opened fire on crowds in morning hours. From the Associated Press. Israeli forces fired on Palestinians trying to access aid in Gaza again on Tuesday, killing 36 people and wounding 207, the Palestinian Health Ministry said. Troops killed at least 163 people and wounded 1,495 in a number of shootings near aid sites run by the Israeli and U.S.-backed Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, which are in military zones that are off-limits to independent media. The Israeli military acknowledges firing warning shots on previous occasions at people who it claims approached its forces in a suspicious manner. The foundation says there has been no evidence in or around the distribution points themselves. It warned people to stay on designated access routes. Meanwhile, Israel reported activist Greta Thunberg on Tuesday, a day after the Israeli military seized the Gaza-bound aid ship she was aboard. Speaking upon arrival in Paris en route to her home country of Sweden, Thunberg called for the release of the other activists who were detained aboard the Madeleine. She described a quite chaotic and uncertain situation during the detention. From the Associated Press in Los Angeles, immigration raids. Guard protecting ICE. Troops stand by as agents make arrests in expansion of duties. National Guard troops began protecting immigration agents Tuesday as they made arrests in Los Angeles, an expansion of their duties that previously were limited to protecting federal property. Photos posted Tuesday by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement show National Guard troops standing guard around officers as they made arrests. ICE said the troops provided perimeter and personnel protection for our facilities and officers who are out on daily enforcement operations. The change moves troops closer to engaging in law enforcement actions like deportations, as President Donald Trump promised. U.S. officials earlier said the Guard members were authorized to provide protection and secure streets and perimeters around areas where enforcement actions took place. The officials, who spoke on condition of anonymity to discuss military operations, said the Guard members are not participating in any of the enforcement actions, but provided security and missions in the Los Angeles area. California Governor Gavin Newsom asked a federal court to block the Trump administration from using the National Guard and Marines to assist with immigration raids in the city, saying it would only heighten tensions. Newsom filed the emergency request after Trump ordered the deployment of about 4,000 National Guard troops and 700 Marines amid protests of the president's stepped-up enforcement of immigration laws. The demonstrations in the city of 4 million people largely have been centered downtown. Marines were not seen on the streets, yet while National Guard troops so far have had limited engagement with protesters, the federal government said Newsom sought an unprecedented and dangerous order that would interfere with its ability to carry out enforcement operations. A judge set a hearing for Thursday. The governor's request said it was in response to a change in orders for the Guard members who originally were deployed to protect federal buildings. The court document said sending troops on immigration raids would only escalate tensions and promote civil unrest. The Marines and another 2,000 National Guard troops were sent to L.A. on Monday, adding to military presence that local officials in Newsom do not want, and that the police chief says it makes it harder to handle the protests safely. Marine Corps General Eric Smith said Tuesday that Marines deployed to the area were not yet called to respond to the protests and only were there to protect federal officials and property. From today's opinion page, we have a column by Michael Sozan, who's a senior fellow for democracy policy at the Center for American Progress. Unconstitutional acts threaten democracy. President Donald Trump is destabilizing the guardrails of our Constitution. Unless he changes course, our nation, the world's oldest continuing democracy, risks a crisis where the president is no longer beholden to the rule of law. Americans will suffer the consequences. America's founding fathers designed the Constitution to place political power in the hands of the people. They granted each of the government's three branches, legislative, executive, and judicial, specific powers, providing checks and balances. This structure sets parameters so presidents cannot act like kings and instead must faithfully carry out the laws passed by Congress and interpreted by judges. Every president has tested constitutional boundaries, but the Trump administration has taken far-reaching, unprecedented actions to try to create an unchecked presidency while stifling dissent and implementing a largely unpopular policy agenda that harms everyday Americans. Echoing statements from authoritarians around the world, Trump proclaimed 3 weeks into his presidency, "He who saves his country does not violate any law." More recently, when asked if he is obligated to uphold the Constitution, Trump shockingly replied, "I don't know." Keen to bend the Constitution toward its will, the Trump administration is undercutting Congress's prerogatives. For example, the administration attempted to undermine independent agencies despite Congress deliberately establishing these agencies to help protect Americans' health, safety, and prosperity, free from undue political pressure. The administration also refused to spend congressionally directed taxpayer funds and dismantled agencies without required congressional approval. Another step involves the administration's attacks on perceived opponents, including universities, law firms, labor unions, former government officials, and media outlets. These actions infringe on the First Amendment right to free speech, the Fifth Amendment right to equal protection and due process, and the Sixth Amendment right to counsel. Perhaps most worrying, the administration in some cases is failing to fully comply with valid court orders. Dozens of judges temporarily halted many of Trump's executive orders, often because they violate core constitutional provisions that protect people from government overreach. This includes the administration's attempts to deport immigrants without a proper hearing, deny Americans birthright citizenship under the 14th Amendment, and usurp the constitutional power of Congress and the states to set election-related rules. Even the Supreme Court, controlled by conservative justices, ordered the administration to stop depriving immigrants due process before deportation. Still, the administration has failed to follow the High Court's order to facilitate the return of an immigrant erroneously sent to a brutal Salvadoran prison. Judge J. Harvey Wilkinson, a conservative Ronald Reagan appointee on the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, has expressed worries about a constitutional crisis. writing that he hopes it is not naive to believe our good brethren in the executive branch perceive the rule of law as vital to the American ethos. Americans share his alarm. Almost 6 in 10 adults say they think Trump has gone too far in using presidential power to achieve his goals. Nearly 7 in 10 adults say they think a president should follow Supreme Court rulings, even if a president thinks a ruling prevents him from protecting the country from a terrorist attack. America's nearly 250-year-old democracy has always been an experiment, one that still is not fully responsive to we the people. An unanswerable, king-like president of any political party thwarts that foundational goal. Now it's up to the courts, Congress, and civil society, including everyday Americans, to exercise collective responsibility and protect the constitutional separation of powers, ensuring presidents remain accountable to us all. Today in history. On this date, in 1509, England's King Henry VIII married his first wife, Catherine of Aragon. In 1776, the Second Continental Congress appointed the Committee of Five, composed of John Adams, Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, Robert Livingston, and Roger Sherman, to draft a Declaration of Independence from Great Britain to be completed in the subsequent 17 days. In 1955, in motor racing's worst disaster, more than 80 people were killed during the 24 hours of Le Mans in France when two cars collided and crashed into spectators. In 1962, Frank Morris, Clarence Anglin, and John Anglin, prisoners at Alcatraz Federal Penitentiary in San Francisco Bay, staged an escape, leaving the island on a makeshift raft. They were never found or heard from again. In 1963, the University of Alabama was desegregated as Vivian Malone and James Hood became the first two black students allowed to enroll in classes. Alabama segregationist and Governor George Wallace initially blocked the doorway to the auditorium where course registration was taking place, delivering a speech before deferring to National Guard orders to move. In 1987, Margaret Thatcher became the first British Prime Minister in over 160 years to win a third consecutive term of office as her Conservative Party held on to a reduced majority in Parliament. Now a bit on air quality, unfit to breathe. Protect yourself from particles the Canadian fires send over border, from Kaylee Wells, Associated Press. Plumes of smoke blanketing large swaths of the U.S. present risks for those who breathe it. The Midwest, Northeast, and Great Lakes regions of the U.S. had very unhealthy air quality for days in early June, according to the EPA, and experts say people should take precautions. The EPA's air quality index converts all pollutant levels into a single number. The lower the number, the better. Anything below 50 is classified as healthy, 50 to 100 is moderate, while 100 to 150 is unhealthy for sensitive groups. Anything above 150 is bad for everyone. The air quality index was around 160 in many parts of the upper Midwest on June 4th. Sensitive groups include people with asthma, lung disease, or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, said Dr. Sanjay Sethi, chief of the Division of Pulmonary Critical Care and Sleep Medicine at the State University of New York at Buffalo's Medical School. For most people, going outside for just a short time won't have a negative long-term impact, Sethi said. Wearing an N45 mask, which became common during the COVID-19 pandemic, will help filter out the pollution. Close your windows and turn on your air conditioner, if you have one, setting it to circulate indoor air. Use blankets to cover cracks that allow outside air into your home, such as under doors. If you happen to have access to an air purifier, even if it's just a room air purifier, try to keep it running and in the room that you're doing most of your activities in. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Wednesday, June 11th.